Our next guest is an Olympic gold medalist in rugby sevens, played in Australia's peak basketball competition for women, the WNBL, and retired mid last year as an AFLW player. She's also an erudite advocate for women in sport as founder of the Female Athlete Project, Chloe Dalton, OAM. Welcome to Summer Grandstand.
Hi, Sam. Hi, Limo. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much for coming on. It's Sunday arvo. It's, you know, late February, and I'm feeling, if I picture you, I feel like you've got 10 screens going, watching a whole lot of sports, because one, you played a whole lot of sports, but two, sport is where your heart and your, you know, your action is. What do you follow most closely at this time of year?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've absolutely been loving the Winter Olympics. It's been really, really cool to see how well the Aussies have been performing. And with my work with the Female Athlete, we follow a lot of the women, you know, throughout their World Cup seasons, and have seen how well they've been doing in those seasons in the lead up to the Olympics. So it's been really, really cool to see some Aussie medals and some amazing performances.
Do you have a favourite sport at the Winter Olympics?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. I find the skeleton pretty wild, to be honest. Bez, who I co-host the podcast with, calls it like sliding down the ice on a Macca's tray, which I think is pretty accurate. It's pretty loose, but they're quite impressive.
Chloe, we want to talk to you about women in sport largely because, as I mentioned, it's sort of your reason to be, it would seem, one, as an athlete, but two, in the work that you've done off the field for many years now. And there was a report that ABC Sport and Deakin University partnered to do the report focused about women in sport, on women in sport, and the findings came out last month. It was called the Elite Athletes in Australian Women's Sport Survey. What findings in the report did you kind of pick out and did you find sort of most informative?
Yeah, I think probably looking at the pay in women's sport is often a really big one. I think a lot of people see the way that athletes, I guess, travel potentially globally, live these amazing lives, potentially representing their country. And I think it's highly glamorized a lot of the time to the outside eye. But I think the reality is for a lot of female athletes, just around often struggling to potentially pay rent and afford daily living expenses. And I think the inconsistencies a lot of the time with income for female athletes is a really big one. You know, a lot of different sports, they might be getting income coming in that's inconsistent, or they might be getting medal bonuses or different money that's coming in, but it's not potentially something you can go and try and get a home loan with a regular salary that's coming in. So I think that's something that a lot of female athletes are experiencing, and I think it's really interesting to see data around how widespread that is.
How important do you think that the survey happened at all is? It feels to me that there's so much anecdotal, you know, things like, oh, there's not enough money in women's sport, there's not enough sponsorship, etc. But this survey and this report actually seem to put some meat on the bones.
Yeah, I think it's so incredibly important. We know that women have been underrepresented, particularly in sport and exercise science research, for all of history, really. We've started to see a real shift in that space, and that's why I think this research like this is so incredibly important to give voices to these athletes. But also, I just love I love research and data. I'm a real data nerd, and I love having probably cold hard evidence that helps to argue in important rooms to try and create change for these athletes and for future generations to come as well.
So one of the key findings on money, and it's often a big one, and by the way, there were 152 responses from elite sports and there were 47 sports involved. So 73% of those surveyed said that they didn't think athletes in their sport got paid enough compared to sportsmen. What is turning the dial with that?
I think we've started to see a real shift in probably how women's sports data is being analysed. I loved seeing some of the data that came out of the Women's Rugby World Cup that I got the chance to travel over to. So that was held, the final was at Twickenham Stadium, September last year, England v Canada. There was 82,000 people, completely filled Twickenham Stadium. And there was an amazing data that came out of World Rugby that talked about they had 1.1 billion social engagements across their owned channels. But they also saw a huge spike in their followers, and two-thirds of those followers were from female followers. So I think I just love little bits of data like that are coming from these different tournaments that probably challenge these ideas, you know, that a lot of the time I read hundreds of comments on social media, you know, women don't watch women's sport. It's simply not true. Yeah. If we change the way that we're targeting these audiences, deliver them content that's appropriate to them, deliver it to areas where they're engaging, there's an incredible generation of girls and women who absolutely love sport and want the chance to be able to engage with it. So I think seeing pieces of data like that probably challenge these really traditional data points that we've always looked at, I think is a really cool way to kind of shift that dial, as you said, and look at, okay, how do we then commercialise that component as well to ensure that these athletes are being remunerated fairly too.
Is there a sport, Chloe, that leads the pack in your mind, perhaps in accordance with your metrics for a sport delivering with its engagement with women?
I think it's probably hard to go past cricket in that sense. I really feel like they've led the way for a lot of women's sport in Australia, in particular across the board, with their collective bargaining agreements. I know the AFLW really followed suit in that space with a lot of components of the CBA negotiation. So I think cricket's probably a big one in terms of the amount that those players can be earning. I think the AFLW's made some really significant progress in recent years. Looking at the NRLW, that's been moving in a great direction. The growth of their competition in terms of the pace that they added in teams and increased the number of games has definitely been slower than the AFLW, but I think that the model that they've gone with has been quite a sustainable model for the NRLW, and it's great to see their minimum salaries increasing over time as well.
You haven't been an elite cricketer as far as we know, but maybe you have. No, but you have been an AFLW player, most recently retired mid last year. What is the single greatest act for progress of the AFLW that the AFL itself, in terms of its management, could make?
Oh, Sam, I feel like you could almost answer that question better than I could. That is a big question.
You've been a player, though, and that's crucial. You've been on the inside, you've been at a club, and your experience, you know, really matters in that sense. I could talk to you about fixturing, but that's kind of boring. What about as a player?
Yeah, I think what I'd really love to see as a player, we've obviously seen an increase in the player wages. What I'd really love to see is increase in investment in the soft cap for the support staff, the high performance staff that surround these athletes. I think we've seen the players potentially moving towards that full-time program in the AFLW, but I think a lot of the time there's potentially that mismatch then with the high-performance staff that go along with that are potentially still in part-time roles. And I think if the entire ecosystem can move jointly in a full-time manner, to me that's going to make the best athletes out of these elite environments.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, before we let you go, Chloe, and back to the Winter Olympics cave that you're in watching that and enjoying it, tell us, I mean, you've been, as we mentioned, an Olympic gold, well, you are an Olympic gold medalist. You played basketball at the top level in this country, AFLW career. How do you get your sporting hit now? How do you sort of fill that part of your cup?
That is a question I'm still trying to answer. I haven't worked out what my retirement sport is. I could say it's potentially, I just have spent the afternoon with my one-year-old little boy. He just pushes the pram around for hours and hours and I just guide the pram. So that's about the level of elite sport I'm participating in at the moment. So I'd love to find something a little bit more stimulating.
That sounds to me like that one-year-old could push a golf cart around a course while you play golf.
Well, I was going to say I need to start him early so he can be playing in the right sports. I thought that's where we're going. But, yeah, let's go with that. He can be my caddy.
Yes.
No. Oh, Chloe, I've got to say, as a mother of an 18-month-old, I hear ya. It is a workout. Look, whatever it looks like, and we have been surveying our audience today on favourite quirky sports, we've got a list as long as your arm. But whatever you do, and I do commend the Female Athlete Project to everyone, thanks for your work in the area of women's sport and the progression of it, and for your sporting career, because many people have enjoyed it in many different sports. And thanks for joining us today on Summer Grandstand.
That means a lot. Thanks so much, Sam. I appreciate it.